save big money on everything for your spring projects at Menards. We have all of your garden and landscaping essentials. Master Garden Premium Garden Soil contains a slow-release fertilizer that feeds gardens for up to 9 months. It produces better results and is ready to use for all your gardening needs. Save big on Menards' great selection of garden and landscaping products. Compare brands in-store or online at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Welcome to Feedback Friday. I'm your host, Jordan Harbinger. Today I'm here with my Feedback Friday producer, my comrade in confab, Gabriel Mizrahi. On the Jordan Harbinger Show, we decode the stories, secrets, and skills of the world's most fascinating people, and we turn their wisdom into practical advice that you can use to impact your own life and those around you. We want to help you see the matrix when it comes to how these amazing people think and behave, and our mission is to help you become a better informed, more critical thinker so you can get a much deeper understanding of how the world works and make sense of what's really happening, even inside of your own mind. If you're new to the show, on Fridays, we give advice to you and answer listener questions. The rest of the week, we have long-form interviews and conversations with a variety of amazing folks, from spies to CEOs, athletes to authors, to thinkers and performers. For a selection of featured episodes to get you started, if you want to find out what some of our favorite guests are, go to jordanharbinger.com and we'll hook you right up. And this week, we had Larry Lawton. This guy, Gabriel, is a former jewel thief. I almost said jewel thief, but former jewel thief. And he used to knock off those diamond stores, diamond outlets, and things like that. So in this episode, we went for a long time. It's a two-parter. I was like, all right, let's plan a fake heist, right? Let's go through it bit by bit, what exactly you do, how do you plan the getaway, how do you case the place, everything. Like, how do you look for what you want? How do you know what you're going to steal? All that stuff. He just took me right through there. This is kind of a cool inside look at somebody who stole, I think, in total, somewhere around $18, $20 million worth of diamonds. That's a lot of diamonds. Again, it's a two-parter, so it's extra, extra long. Make sure you've had a listen and a look to everything that we created for you this week. You can reach us here on Feedback Friday, friday@jordanharbinger.com. Please keep your emails concise. Include a descriptive subject line. That makes our job a lot easier. If there's something you're going through, any big decision you're wrestling with, you need a new perspective on something, life, love, work, how to deal with your sister's neo-Nazi boyfriend, whatever's got you staying up at night lately, hit us up, friday@jordanharbinger.com. We're here to help, and we do keep every email anonymous. Gabe, we have an update, right?
Yeah, we do. We got an update, actually, from a listener question we had a couple weeks ago. If you guys remember, there was a 46-year-old mother of three young children who was going out to bars and hooking up with women behind her husband's back and not telling him. And she was writing in because she was, first of all, dealing with the weight of that secret, but also ashamed of her orientation, struggling with coming out, all that stuff that comes with a big decision like that.
That's right. And then another listener with a very similar story wrote in with her experience, which was helpful, super interesting. We passed that letter on. Normally, we don't share updates, but I think we're going to change that because we do get interesting updates all the time, not necessarily to every letter, but some of these juicy ones, especially, somehow, they're engaging enough. We get a lot of email about it, so we thought we'd share one or two updates every show. So, Gabe, what was the update on this one?
So she wrote in, "Hi, Jordan. After listening to your podcast, I decided to have my mother-in-law take care of the kids so I could go out to a bar with my husband and just tell him straight out." He's an interesting choice of words.
Yeah.
he's perfectly okay with it. She said he was super relieved that it was with women. She did mention how helpful the email we forwarded along was. I think it helped her have the conversation with her husband because they got to actually talk about somebody else's story. The woman who wrote in had a very similar experience, but her marriage ended up very differently. So I guess it did help. She writes, "Anyway, everything turned out well, and I am able to continue my hookups, and I love this man even more. Thank you so much." And she signed the letter. So
yeah,
there it is, a happy ending all around.
That's right, a happy ending all around. I thought it would be kind of funny if she went to a bar with her husband to talk about how she's secretly a lesbian, and a bunch of women were like, "Hey, fancy seeing you here. Yeah, last night was great."
I don't think she took him to the bar where she was picking up.
Probably not. No, that's yeah. A good
which
tactical
I think we
decision.
Decided. Did we decide that bar was called the White Unicorn? I think that's where we landed.
Sounds about right. Yeah, that definitely sounds right. So yeah, happy ending all around. Didn't expect that to happen so quickly, but I'm glad it did. Obviously, telling her husband was the right thing to do. And the big question, aside from accepting herself, was whether he would accept it and what kind of relationship they would have.
Yep.
I think it's remarkable that he accepts her fully and there's no secret between them. But I totally. Also wonder if in a few weeks he's going to be like, so is that still happening? Because the more I think about it, the more it kind of is like cheating, even if it's with women. And instead of just being like, oh, cool, it's with women, no big deal.
Right.
Like that might be the initial reaction, but it might get muddier and murkier later on.
Yeah, he sits with it for 2 weeks and he's like, why aren't you home 3 nights a week?
Yeah.
I don't know if it matters anymore. Yeah, that'll be interesting. I hope she writes in with another update if anything changes. But I was glad to hear that they figured it out for now.
All right, let's get to this week's conundrum. What's the first thing out of the mailbag?
Hey, Jordan and Gabriel. A little over a year ago, my coworker and friend, who is intelligent, self-sufficient, and strong, started seeing this guy she really liked and things got serious pretty quickly. He liked to take her out to big extravagant dinners and send her way over the top expensive chocolates and flowers, and we, her coworkers, started to see red flags pretty early on as he started to go off the rails and tell wild tales and blame things on PTSD when he said and did hurtful things.
Yikes.
He showed signs of paranoia. He wanted to isolate her from friends he didn't like. He also proposed after a few months.
Whoa.
And was really pushy about getting married quickly. My friend, who we are sure has been through some trauma in her past, she's a big people pleaser and did not want to fight him about any of it.
Yeah, simultaneous sigh. Oh my gosh.
Some other weird things about this guy. Apparently, he's an ex-military type contract dude who says he's been to Iraq and has been undercover and living among gangs. He's got a small arsenal and is out on disability and seems to be a huge mess in general. Pretty early on, he moved into my friend's condo with her, but he was going stir crazy and worried people were after him. They ended up buying a place together, which has been a legitimate hot mess. He has since made enemies of the neighbors, taking them to court, and also took my friend's credit card to go buy a tractor without her permission.
There's so much in this paragraph that I was waiting for you to finish the sentence, and then it just kept getting worse. Okay, so PTSD, totally something people can deal with. There's a lot of veterans that deal with that. But then the fact that he's like super armed, okay, a lot of people like guns. A lot of people like guns who have PTSD. They're not necessarily dangerous. But the fact that he is thinking people are after him when that's just not probably true at all, that is mental illness. That is paranoia. And then, of course, taking your neighbors to court, never a good idea, and then stole her credit card and buys a tractor. I'm so confused already. Why? What is going on here? This guy is just totally unstable and probably dangerous. Continue.
More recently, she has had nothing good to say about him and knows that she has been catfished. Apparently, after drinking too much last weekend, he went on a tangent and wanted out of the car on their way home. She tried stopping him because they were close to the neighbors that he hates, and he's always armed, and she didn't want anything to get nasty. Apparently, he went off on her. He dragged her up the dirt road, not even to the car, just up the road by her hair.
What?
Somehow, they made it back to the house, and she wanted to be left alone, but he kept harassing her. The neighbors must have called the cops, and because everyone knows he's armed to the teeth, the SWAT team showed up and demanded that they come down with their hands up. They questioned my friend and had him in cuffs and were ready to haul him off and take away his weapons too, but she wouldn't say a word against him, and that was the end of that. My friend showed up to work the next day wearing her mask, which did not cover up all of her wounds. I could tell something was wrong without seeing her. She's ashamed and embarrassed, and it's a small town. Everyone has police scanners, and all of her neighbors told everyone who knows her what was going on. Of course, he's apologetic and has sworn off drinking and is making a big show of taking his meds and going to the doctor to get more support for the PTSD and has been leaving her alone for the most part like she asked. My friend knows everything about this is wrong and that she needs to leave, but it's possible that she's just going to stay like the normal abuse victim and wait for things to get better, which is totally her decision. I do respect that, but I am fairly certain he will hurt her again. I am also fairly certain that if she does happen to leave, he may very well come unglued and at the very least make a scene here at work. I dare not think about the worst case scenario. I did talk, well, mostly listen, with her this morning. She knows we all love and support her, but beyond that, what would you do in this situation? Signed, Distressed by My Friend's Unrest.
This is horrible. This is the beginning of a horrible true crime documentary.
Yep.
The kind where you sit there watching and you go, how did she not know? How did nobody do anything? It's just an incredibly sad story to hear and a very difficult position for you as her friend to be in. And this is super scary. There's physical abuse going on. There's emotional abuse going on. There are clearly psychiatric issues at play. There are weapons. And there's an element of financial manipulation here. That's sort of the least of our concerns, but it's just tragic enough that this guy's terrorizing your friend, but then he's also swiping our MasterCard and coming home in a freaking John Deere tractor cab. I mean, those things cost tens of thousands of dollars, depending on the model, of course. I mean, where do you keep it?
Yep.
Where do you even keep that? Where do you buy a when you buy a tractor, do you just roll up from the dealership and park it in the driveway?
That's a great question.
I've got questions about casual tractor ownership that are just not important at all right now. Listen, I can tell how worried you are about your friend and how helpless you feel watching this happen. Also, how scared that you are that you might get caught up in this somehow. I mean, the freaking SWAT team came to their house and even they couldn't do anything about this guy. So what are you supposed to do when you're sitting there eating your lunch at your desk and this psycho comes in armed and unhinged and possibly intoxicated? This is terrifying. So let me just first start by acknowledging how complicated situations like this actually are. It's very easy for us from the outside to say, I would never be in a situation like this, or just get the hell out of there. But domestic abuse dynamics are very complex, and they're even messier when the couple is living together. Thank goodness they don't seem to have kids. That wasn't in the letter. That would have just been a million times worse. There's a ton of research on the cycle of violence and why it's hard for people to leave a relationship like this, even when it's obvious that they should. And the research, by the way, also shows that the most dangerous time for an abused person is when they are leaving. So telling your friend to bounce, which absolutely is what she should do, but I'll get to that in a second. Telling her to leave without a plan, that could actually be putting her and you guys at even more risk. That's the tricky calculation you have to make in situations like this. You have to balance the need to leave against the costs of getting out, which include the very real risk of even more violence, candidly. So the hardest part about watching someone else go through this is really accepting that you can't make someone leave a bad relationship. It's sad, it's frustrating, it's infuriating, and it goes against every instinct you have as someone's friend to protect them, right? At the end of the day, you just can't physically remove her from the house or send this guy away for good, even though it sounds like he could use some alone time and some therapy. All you can do is support her in making the right decision for herself. So here's how I'd do that. First, I would continue talking to your friend about this relationship and help her see that she needs to leave. It sounds like she already does. It sounds like you're already doing this and that she knows what she has to do, but refuses to act. And that's tough. Maybe with time, you can give her the insight and courage that she needs to finally leave. In these conversations, keep coming back to what she wants, what would be most helpful to her, even if that's different from what you want in the short term. But like I said, this is her decision to make. It's possible she'll never leave. And as tragic as it is, you're ultimately going to have to let her do that if that's what she wants to do, because that's her life. One thing I highly recommend doing is keeping a journal along the way. Whenever you learn about an instance of abuse, I would jot down a few notes about the date and the time it happened and what you heard or what you saw. Your friend probably isn't tracking these details because she's in the middle of all this. That documentation will become crucial evidence if your friend ever does decide to approach law enforcement, but I'll get to that in a minute. The next best thing you can do, and this is actually important no matter what happens, the best thing you can do is give her some key resources for victims of domestic abuse. There are a ton of resources out there. Support groups, therapists, legal resources, shelters if she needs a safe place to stay, which it sounds like she does. I would Google domestic violence resources in your state, in your county, see which organizations can help. If you go to womenshealth.gov, you'll also find a list of helpful organizations in each state. By the way, we're going to link to these in the show notes. You don't have to write it down. It's going to be linked at jordanharbinger.com in the show notes for this episode. The National Domestic Violence Hotline is one of the best ones. It offers 24-hour support and crisis intervention, but there are dozens of them, and we'll link to a couple of other good lists in the show notes as well. These organizations are excellent, and they will give you and your friend all the information you need to make the best decision. I highly recommend reading up on this and reaching out if you need to. If your friend does decide to leave, and I really hope that she does one day soon, then you're going to want to help come up with a plan. Like I said, it's important that she leave, but it's more important that she leaves safely. So I would use the resources I just mentioned to help your friend create a solid plan. For example, you could help her move out when the guy's not at home or when he's out of town. The problem is, Gabriel, he's on disability, right?
Right.
Maybe he doesn't have a job at all and he's always home looking out the window, you know, polishing his 9mm or whatever. I mean, this is not a guy probably with a lot going on, not a lot of friends.
I get a Taxi Driver vibe from this guy.
Like the movie Taxi Driver?
Yeah, like you're looking
relax,
at me.
Taxi Drivers. We're not talking about you. We're talking about, is it Robert De Niro who's in that? That's Robert De Niro, right?
It is, yeah.
And that's a Oliver Stone film? Wait, no.
That was Martin Scorsese.
Martin Scorsese. Some famous director who's an old white guy. Yes, I knew that.
Just as like an image of what this guy's doing, I feel like he has a lot of time to just sit at home and think about all the strange things he's going to come up with to do.
You talking to me? Is that the line from Taxi Driver? You talking to me? And he like has that gun deploy.
Yeah, he's like, there's no one else here. But yes, I think you're dead on. This coming up with this plan, helping her move in, the guy isn't home. That's the move. Absolutely.
Look, you could encourage her to tell someone close to her, another close friend, a family member, maybe her neighbor, the ones that don't like him. Probably know he's a psycho, and they might have a soft spot for you because they know you're stuck with him. I don't think they dislike you, too. It's unlikely. They probably just think he's crazy. Tell them that you're moving out. Please be on alert if something happens. You could let her stay at your place if that's something you're willing to do, or I would do this. I would help her find a shelter where she will be safe, and you could give her information on therapists who specialize in domestic violence. This would be amazing for her to have. Another person who can work with her, help her come up with this plan. Basically, you want to empower her to make the best decision for herself. Just keep in mind that you have to be careful here too, you personally, because as you know, your safety may be at risk if you get involved. That's why I think the shelter is more important and probably safer, not only because then you're not directly involved, she's not in your guest bedroom, but those shelters, there are cops there, they're secure facilities because they expect psycho husbands to come and look for them. So they don't divulge any information. They can lock people out. The cops know that if they get a call from there, that they gun it over there. They might even have a cop that sits there on duty or a guard. So that's an important type of resource in this situation. If you help her physically move out, for example, make sure you are also doing that carefully so you don't find yourself face to face with the freaking Hurt Locker while you're carrying her Davenport out to the U-Haul or whatever. And since you said this guy could come to your office, I would also talk to HR and your manager at work. Yes, it's embarrassing. You might want to give your friend a heads up that you're doing this so she's not caught off guard, but this is totally within your right to do. I think it's your responsibility to do that because this directly affects you and all of your coworkers. You really don't want them to sit there and possibly come to harm, and you're thinking, oh, I could have warned people about this. We could have been ready. Give them the rundown of the situation. Tell them this guy is a threat to her and possibly to all of you, and explain why you think he might come to the office one day if they don't already know the situation. Tell him that they need to be on the lookout for this guy and that they need to work with your building's security, if there is any, to stop him before he arrives. I mean, this guy's freaking poster should be up at the reception desk. And if your friend ever decides to leave, maybe your managers can arrange for her to work from home for a few weeks until things cool down. But they need to know that this is going on in advance. By the way, some HR people, they could be useless in this department, or they could be very helpful. But if you don't find that they get it, or they don't know what to do, or they're sort of poo-pooing your concerns, share the resources you found in your research and work with them to come up with a plan, or just go over their head, because this is your physical safety. It's too important for someone to just go, oh, you're just being a Karen, stop worrying about it. Another option you have, and I think you should do this, they may not be able to do anything though, is contact law enforcement. I actually consulted with Joe Navarro, episode 135. He's a retired FBI agent. He said that in this situation with your friend, this is a situation where you should send letters to the chief of police, the state attorney, and or the district attorney's office. Let them know about this guy and what he's capable of. Sadly, I don't have very high hopes for the police if your friend isn't even willing to talk to them and press charges. There's only so much they can do. But it would still be worth going on the record with these people yourself if things do escalate, or if she changes her mind. Or who knows? If he commits another crime and then the police are already aware of this guy, it's good to have that in the file so the cops know what they're dealing with. Just like when the SWAT team came in because they knew he was armed. They can prep for this. If you do contact law enforcement, then I would share that journal we talked about a moment ago. That will be some solid evidence of what's going on, and it could be the thing that changes her situation for good. Detail what this guy has done to your friend in the past, what he's capable of doing in the future. They don't have to read between the lines on this. They're going to say, look, she's not exaggerating. She's got a logbook of this woman coming in with bruises on her face that she made over a period of 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks. Mention his psychiatric issues, that he's got a history of violence, that he's heavily armed, and that he has the means of continuing that violence. Again, I know I keep saying this, but it's really important. You have to balance this decision against the risk of creating more problems for your friend. If you report this to the cops, They do a door knock to check up on her. He might think that she reported it and take it out on her. Sadly, that's very common. I'm not saying you shouldn't do anything. I'm just saying you have to keep in mind all the factors at play here. And if your friend ever tells you something more specific, especially something imminent, like, oh, he said he's going to come to the office next week and shoot everyone, call the police immediately. Don't think that it's a threat, an empty threat, idle, nothing. It is not worth the risk. In that case, the police absolutely have the ability and the duty to intervene, and you have a responsibility to everyone involved to notify them as well. So bottom line, support your friend, be there for her as much as you can, do your research into domestic violence resources like the ones we linked in the show notes, and be thoughtful before you act. Beyond that, this is her life, and she's going to have to make this decision for herself. She's in the toughest position here for sure, but you're in the second toughest. You're standing by, you're watching it happen. I really feel for both of you, and I hope you can get through to her and be the person who eventually helps her get out before it's too late. Gabe, it is crazy to me how toxic abusers are. You've got his wife's colleagues writing into us, afraid to go to work because he might hurt them. I mean, these people are an absolute cancer.
Yeah, it's so sad. It is so sad, but I think your advice is dead on, and I hope that it helps her help her figure out how to get out of the situation eventually. But like you said, when it's safe.
You're listening to Feedback Friday here on the Jordan Harbinger Show. We'll be right back. And now back to Feedback Friday on the Jordan Harbinger Show. All right, what's next?
Jordan and Gabe, I'm writing because my best friend of 12 years, who is also my business partner, recently ghosted me. We had been working on a joint podcast project for almost a year. We had an agent from a major talent agency representing us, and this summer, a big platform, think along the lines of Spotify, they had shown interest in our show. But when it came time to actually meet with the platform, my best friend wrote an email to the group that she was busy all of a sudden and could not continue. That's it. No further explanation. Since then, she hasn't spoken to me. Prior to that, we spoke at least 3 to 4 times a week for both personal and business matters. To add insult to injury, she's been posting not-so-subtle messages on social media about friends who let you down and getting rid of people who were never there for you. In the past, she has disappeared from time to time because she was mad at me, but never confronts the issue. A lot of this stems from the fact that she has crazy, unrealistic expectations of her friends. She's one of those friends who expects you to drop, physically and emotionally, everything to be with her. I am a communicator, and I've told her in the past that I need to be explicitly told of her needs. Don't talk to me and woo-woo Instagram memes. I'm not a mind reader. I think that as a single 42-year-old woman with no kids, her friends are her life and she places expectations on them that no one can meet. As such, she's lost many friends along the years. So my question to you is, did I dodge a toxic bullet here? Is the sloppy way she handled business a sign of her character? I try to keep my emotions separate from business, but I'm not happy that she screwed me over on a great opportunity. How do you deal with ghosts? Signed, an aspiring Ghostbuster.
Well, this really sucks. I mean, first of all, I'm okay with it because less competition in the podcast space, but I'm actually really sorry this happened to you. This will affect you personally, professionally. I mean, it just really hits all of the wrong notes, right? This is like the worst kind of sort of friend that screws you over in your career and personally. As the host of a show, I know how much work goes into building a podcast, getting it to the point where a major platform is interested. So your letter just hit me on a few levels here. You sound like a very thoughtful and sensitive person. You're probably a great partner to work with as well. So on top of this being hurtful, it's also just incredibly frustrating. To answer your first question right off the bat, did you dodge a toxic bullet here? Yes, you did. Absolutely you did. It sounds to me like there's a long history of conflict with this friend, even before you began working on this project. If this problem hadn't come to a head now, it probably would have escalated when you guys were tied together in this podcast, and then you would have been really in trouble. By the way, I worked for years with partners like this, people who are dysfunctional, toxic, terrible at communicating, so I'm speaking from experience here. It's really a bad situation to be stuck in. In fact, the less success you have, the easier it is to walk away from something. And so that success that we did have tied me together with these people for a while. And it was like, ugh, I can't rebuild this. I'm making a good living. I'm just going to deal with it. Every business has its issues. You start rationalizing it. But if you don't have much going on and somebody pulls this, you can just be like, bye. And so in a way, I'm glad for you that this happened when it did. But yes, you dodged a major bullet here. And in that sense, your friend, she's done you a huge favor. I know that doesn't take away the sting of what she's done, but I hope it gives you a little perspective here, maybe even some gratitude in a weird way. Because in her own messed up way, she saved you a ton of time and energy by showing you who she was before it was too late. As for your second question, is the sloppy way she handled your business a sign of her character? First of all, let's be very clear. What you're describing here, this is not sloppy. It's not like she missed a couple emails from your agent or she showed up late to a conference call with Spotify or whatever. That would be sloppy. Maybe borderline negligent. Sure. This is different. Your friend projected needs and expectations onto you that were unclear and impossible to meet. She went from talking to you 3 to 4 times a week to straight up ghosting you and not answering any of your communication. Then she passive-aggressively raged at you on the internet for abandoning her when she was the one who actually abandoned you in the first place with zero explanation, compromising your career and destroying your friendship. And y'all know this. You don't need me to tell you. But I'm saying it back to you so that you understand that this kind of behavior, this is not just sloppy. This is dysfunctional. It's kind of pathological, and it's unfair. It's a sign that she has some serious issues that have nothing to do with you. Things that she needs to work on if she's going to be able to have productive, stable relationships with anyone and be able to work with anyone for that matter. So is all this a sign of her character? Honestly, I don't know. I'm not sure it matters. You could argue that it's really her dysfunction and her trauma talking and not who she really is deep down or whatever. But as far as you're concerned, yeah, it's basically who she is. For now, anyway. So if you're asking that question because you're wondering if you should forgive her or if you don't have a right to be angry and hurt by what she did, then all I can say is this. She is showing you the kind of person that she really is. If I were you, I would accept that person at face value. Gabe, have you ever heard this expression, when people show you who they are, believe them? Or when people tell you who they are, believe them?
Yeah.
I feel like I heard that on Oprah or something.
Something like that. Super Soul Sunday.
Yeah, probably like watching daytime TV with my mom during some holiday. It's like when people show you who they are, believe them.
Let me write that down. That's going to come in handy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on an Instagram meme. That's where you put mm-hmm. that. But it's one of those things that tends to be true. When people tell you who they are, show you who they are, you should believe them. The best indicator of future behavior is past behavior. Mm. So if this type of behavior is not something you would put up with in a business, in a friendship, now's a great time to lay down that boundary before you sign a deal with a platform and you have to work with them and then they stick you with all the work or make it just impossible for you to perform. So you lose the deal, you lose money, your reputation suffers. Not being able to sign a deal with a platform, not great. Failing during the performance of a deal when you've signed a contract, much worse.
Good point.
Much worse.
Good point. Yep.
So, Gabe, I don't know. What about, how do you deal with the ghosts?
Well, that can be really hard. What sucks about ghosting is that it deprives you of information. It deprives you of closure. And in some ways, you know, that's a form of what they call ambiguous loss, which, not to be super dramatic about it, but that's basically a loss that doesn't leave you with a clear understanding of what actually happened. It happens with like breakups that don't end properly, or if somebody disappears and you don't know if they died or not. I know things are not quite as dire as that, but I think some of the same stuff is at work in this situation. Ambiguous loss makes it a lot harder to accept something and move past it. You're clearly angry. You're clearly disappointed about your friend, but I'm sure that those feelings exist alongside a lot of other feelings of hurt and embarrassment and confusion is what I'm hearing a lot of. So you're basically mourning the end of this friendship, but you're doing that without all of the information you need to really put it to bed. So if you feel conflicted about all of this, like you're not fully in control of your experience or your take on this whole relationship, that makes total sense. That's very typical when you get ghosted by somebody you're very close with. So I think you have a few options. First, you could write your friend an email laying all of this out. You could tell her your experience of what went down, explain how it made you feel, explain how it hurt your career, her career, your friendship, and then invite her to explain herself to help you see something that maybe you're missing, if you're missing it at all. Maybe she'll respond with something that'll help you understand her choices a little bit better, even if what she says only proves how insane she really is. At least it'll give you some more security in your decision to just end the friendship and move on. Or who knows, maybe she'll say something that shows that she's really trying to work on this stuff and you might decide to forgive her. You might decide to help her do that. But I would seriously caution you against that. You have 12 years of data here and some serious instances of not so cool behavior on her part. So I would not dismiss all of that just for the sake of the history that you two have. Ultimately, it's up to her to do the work and prove that she's changed. But that still would not invalidate the very real feelings you have about how all of this ended up going down. So my advice, move on, keep building your own projects, partner with people who share your interests, who share your values, That's really the best thing you could do right now. And in the absence of that closure, dealing with someone who ghosts you, that's really a process of mourning and allowing yourself to feel whatever you feel and take the time to process it and move on. It's hard, yes, but it will happen. And the more you allow yourself to have your own experience of this whole thing, the faster it will happen. And down the road, this story will be a lesson to you in how to handle toxic people. I think that's the gift that Jordan was talking about a moment ago. It will remind you what you will and will not put up with in a relationship. And it'll teach you to recognize those red flags the moment they pop up, rather than burying them or, you know, sweeping them under the carpet or discounting your intuition when they do come up. And that's really the best lesson that a ghost can teach you. They might always kind of hang around in your memory, but if you can find meaning in them, then it's actually a good thing that they never go away entirely.
Well, well said. Thank you very much for that. I just find it so irritating on a personal. I know exactly how this person feels. Like, are you kidding me? We did all this work and we've been friends for so long. You know what? I didn't even think of this before. Let me know what you think, Abe. Self-sabotage is in play here too, right? They're right on the cusp of this.
Could be.
And the friend is like, got some issue with success or feeling not feeling entitled. What is it? Feeling worthy.
Yeah.
So she's going to go, how do I screw this up? This is all subconscious, by the way, but how do I screw this up? Okay, I just ghost, right? That way I can blame the other person for this. But wait, if I just ghost and I blame her, there's got to be a reason. And then it's like, oh, she didn't send me a happy birthday text. And then it becomes this big thing that she can then rationalize as now your fault, when really she's doing this because she can't actually succeed, because it messes with the idea of who she is in her own head, is somebody who's never going to be anything or not going to succeed or not going to, at least not succeed in this.
I think there's definitely something to that. And, you know, we can't put this person in a chair. She's not the one who wrote in. It's very difficult. But I did get that sense when I was reading the part about her placing these unrealistic expectation and needs on her friends, things that people can't realistically meet. I mean, that's a really good way to actually not be in a relationship with somebody, right? If you hold them to impossibly high standards that are somehow inside of your own head, then you rage at them for not meeting those expectations that you strangely had and didn't communicate. It's not the exact same thing, but it's a similar dynamic with the podcast. It's like the second we get close to actually doing the thing that we said we were going to do, I'm going to back out. And in that way, in both of these areas of her life, she's kind of doing the same thing. I only bring this up, I think the reason we're getting into this is just to reassure this person that this partner would have been terrible to work with. And she has to do a lot of work on her own before she becomes a dependable and helpful partner, for sure. So yeah, dodged a bullet. Move on.
All right. What's next?
Hey, Jordan, Gabe, and all you other beautiful people who make the show as great as it is. That is such a nice opening.
Yeah.
That was cool. I'm writing to ask you about choosing a single path versus a multidisciplinary artistic path. I've been acting for a little over a decade in high school, college, fringe theater, and professional houses. I consider performing to be my first love, and I can't imagine doing anything else as a career. Well, except for maybe all the other things on my list. When I turned 21, I became a draglesque queen, that's drag and burlesque. When I was 23, I took some voice acting classes and was even having regular coaching sessions. When I was 24, I started learning how to pole dance. And when I was 25, I started co-writing a musical with a dear friend and co-writing several choose-your-own-adventure D&D style comedies with another dear friend. Both of these projects are seeing some exciting progress as far as professional opportunities go. And at 26, I started producing my own burlesque shows. Here's the thing. All of these different artistic avenues challenge me and teach me a lot of valuable skills that just being an actor doesn't. But I realize that keeping all of these up is not sustainable in the slightest. Apart from writing, I have not stuck with any of these other avenues over the years. I couldn't continue with voice acting because I didn't have the time to learn the tech, and at the time I was focused more on stage acting and doing drag. Now that I'm second-guessing going back to drag in light of the pandemic, I'm gravitating towards going back to voice acting. And with drag and pole dancing, I've noticed that people who started around the same time as me are way ahead of me in terms of skill and professional opportunities. I think that's because whenever an acting gig would come up, I'd stop doing drag and pole dancing. I think I'm feeling this pressure to choose right now because I'm 27 and I need to commit to something. Otherwise, I'm never going to get better. So I know I need to drop something, but what? How will I know if I make the right choice? Thanks for all that you do. Signed, Spoiled for Choice.
You know, I'm laughing to myself because I'm thinking of drag names. You know, have you ever, their names are always like Bridget Tunnel, like Bridge and Tunnel, or like
right.
Helen is Troy, mm-hmm. or like, Cul-de-sac, C-A-L, like man names, but that are also, I don't know, whatever. Google drag names. It's endlessly entertaining. Anyway, I think this one might be all you. This person sounds talented. I have the opposite problem. I had the opposite problem growing up, too, where my only talents were things that got me in trouble with the FBI. I didn't have a ton of options.
Yeah, you were like, do I hack into this phone box or that phone box? Or yeah. Do I just wiretap the neighbor?
Which prison am I going to go to?
Which neighbor do I wiretap? It's so hard to choose. Well, first of all, congratulations on being talented in so many different areas. You sound very curious. You sound very passionate. Having to choose a path when you have so many options, that's a nice problem to have. I mean, it's also the downside to being good at so many things. This is something that talented people struggle with a lot. It doesn't get talked about as often, deciding where to focus your energy, how to spend your time, where to place your bets. I will also say that this is pretty normal for someone in their 20s, and in many ways, it's what your 20s are for, trying things out, playing, discovering, but you are right. At some point, it does start to matter how you spend your time. And as exciting as it is to be amazing at multiple things, it's even more exciting to actually succeed at something. And I think that's what you really want. You know, you want to see things through, you want to succeed in a meaningful way, and you want to build your identity and your career around something concrete, something that is truly your own. So look, it's a hard question to answer definitively. I wish we could talk for a couple hours about how you feel about all these projects, where you feel the most fulfilled, but here's my question for you, and it's a question that I would encourage you to ask throughout your career. Are you pursuing all of these avenues and projects because you genuinely love them all, or are you pursuing them because you're afraid of the commitment required to really excel at one of them?
Ooh, that's a really good take. I like that. That's also a heavy question.
Yeah.
But it's really important because I think you're asking it because I get the sense from this letter that there might be a couple of things going on here.
Well, yeah, because you say you didn't continue with voice acting because you didn't have the time to learn the tech and you were focused on acting and doing drag. Okay, fair enough. But then whenever an acting gig would come up, you'd stop doing drag. Now that you can't perform, you're going back to voice acting. So it sounds to me like you're pinballing between these pursuits without a strong strategy. And look, I'm sure you have some very good reasons for doing that. There's time constraints. There's the pandemic. Nobody can control that. There are random opportunities popping up. I totally get it. There's definitely something to be said for being spontaneous and flexible and just following the current. But pinballing in that way as a matter of policy, if you just kind of live your life that way, I think that can also be a clever way to avoid sticking with something long enough to find out just how hard it is to really succeed. And you say you didn't have the time to learn the tech around voiceover, but that's really another way of saying that you didn't prioritize the time to learn the tech, that you chose something else instead of learning the tech, or that you just didn't want to learn the tech in the first place. And it does make me wonder if there are other versions of not learning the tech in your life, you know, other challenges you might be avoiding in each of these avenues by spreading yourself across so many of them. And at the end of the day, whether you're consciously doing this or unconsciously doing this, doesn't matter. This is what's happening. You're spreading yourself thin and then skipping the work required to truly excel. I have to say, I also found it interesting that in your letter, you said you're looking around at your peers and noticing that they're further ahead of you. Comparing yourself to other people, that's totally normal. It's basically impossible not to do, especially when you're in the arts. Trust me, I get that. I would even argue that comparing yourself to other people can be useful to a certain degree, but when you talk about comparing yourself, it does make me wonder if other people's perception of you and how you use those perceptions to form your perception of yourself, how that might be playing a very big role in your decisions here. You know, are you pursuing all these different paths because they give you validation? Are you sticking with them because you're afraid of what people might think if you decided to focus on just one or two of them? Do you feel like you're making professional choices based on what the people around you value rather than what you really love, what brings you joy, what speaks to your unique talents? Again, I know those are heavy questions. I would ask yourself those questions too, though, so you can make sure that this tendency to self-compare, which every single one of us has, by the way, it's not a personal failing or anything like that, but to make sure that that impulse is not driving your decisions, because at the end of the day, this is your life. It's your career. And if you succeed at all at these projects, it won't mean anything unless it's really what you want to do. And listen, I really don't mean to be a buzzkill by pointing out all of this stuff. I will let you decide if it fits. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. Personally, I think it's really cool that you're writing this musical and that you're developing this choose your own adventure comedy. It sounds cool. I hope you find success with all of those projects. I just want to give you another perspective here because I know that trying to do everything can sometimes be a great way of avoiding doing one thing really well, and I would hate for that to happen without you noticing. So look, there's this writer, his name is Mordecai Rickler, he's one of my favorite authors, and in one of his books, a character says something that I think you'll really appreciate. He says, "A boy can be 2, 3, 4 potential people, but a man is only one. He murders the others." And obviously, you can replace boy with girl and man for woman. The point is this. What versions of yourself do you need to put to bed so that you can become the one person you were meant to be? And I'm not saying you can't do multiple things in life. Obviously, Jordan and I do that. We love it. It's great. Although even with us, I think we do one or two or three things really well and have put to bed a lot of other things that we really wanted to do because it would be a mess.
Sure. My drag career is going nowhere.
I remember when you call me, you're like, do I give up the crown or do I like right. focus on the podcasting? But look, trying to do everything all the time would prevent us from doing nothing at all. So I would sit with that question and see what comes up for you. It's not a one and done thing. There's no pressure to come up with the right answer next week. I think you said you're 27. You have so much time. I mean, I know it's like I'm going to be 30 soon and I have to decide and I get it. That matters to some degree, but you still are right in the middle of exploring all these things. But the question I just asked you, the quote that I just shared, that's probably the kind of question you'll be asking yourself for the rest of your life. I know I am. And in a world where you can only do so many things well, where there's probably one or two things that really speak to who you are, I think it's worth coming up with your own answer.
Solid answer, Gabe. Thanks for that. I am wondering, though, what's your drag name? Because I think for me, I would have to come up with something maybe either self-deprecating or law-related.
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking, okay, what about Miranda Rights?
Oh, shit, that's a really good one.
W-R-I-G-H-T-S, yeah.
Did you spend time thinking about this, or did that just occur
to you? I spent
time
thinking about it.
That's amazing. I was like, that is damn clever.
Yeah, no, I'm not that good at... Dude, my show's called The Jordan Harbinger Show. I'm not good at naming things. It did take me a while to think of Miranda Rights.
Man, I don't know what mine would be. I mean, I'm just like the guy who writes the sign-off things at the end of the emails, so I don't know if I
But
can
I did
this,
come but... up with one for you, too. Let me know what you think of this. I thought, okay, it's got to have to do with writing,
uh-huh.
right? Uh-huh. Page Turner.
Oh, that is really good. Damn. Or like pen to paper.
Yeah. Pen to paper. Yeah. Something along paper. Those. Or pen to paper. Yeah. T apostrophe paper, maybe.
P-E-N-N-T-A-P-E-R.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. There's so many good. This is like endlessly entertaining. I swear. If you Google, you know what? In fact, Google best drag names and you just have a fun night reading. They're so funny. They're so creative.
There are a lot of them.
There's a lot. Yes, there's a lot.
I'm going to get into this later.
I know we have some drag queens listening to the show because they've written to me before. I think Bridget Tunnel might be the name of one of them. I think that's why I had that one. I could be misremembering that. Bridget Tunnel, if you're listening, shout out. This is the Jordan Harbinger Show and this is Feedback Friday. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening and supporting the show. Your support of our advertisers keeps us going. Who doesn't love some good products and or services? You can always visit jordanharbinger.com/deals for all the details on everybody that helps support the show. And now for the conclusion of Feedback Friday. All right, drag names aside, what's next?
Hey guys, I'm a 53-year-old man happily married to my great and beautiful 53-year-old wife for the last 30 years. We live in the US, we both work, I love my job, my salary is average, she hates her job, but her salary is high. We have a daughter who lives near us who is married with two young children. 3 years ago, my wife started this fantasy of living in Europe. She hasn't lived anywhere else but hates what America has become. I still love our home, but she has not given up on this dream. In fact, she wants to move next year. She wants to give her boss notice now. She thinks that I can find an English teaching job in Europe because I taught in Asia in my early 20s. She says that she can find a job as well, but I don't know what she can do, and I don't see financially how we can do it, as English teachers do not make much in most of Europe. If the salary were much higher, I would love to live in Europe. She says that I'm pessimistic, but will not come up with a financial plan. The past 3 years, she has only thought of Europe, and that's what has kept her going. I don't want to give up the stable life for such a big unknown or I would do it, but she cries when I say this and is still determined for us to go. If I choose not to go, she will hate me. What should I do? Signed, am I becoming an ex or an expat?
Oof. Well, look, I think we can all agree that living in Europe is amazing, or the fantasy of living in Europe anyway is usually more amazing. I think that's why so many people are watching Emily in Paris on Netflix right now, despite the fact that it's about a walking pair of Ugg boots whose idea of cultural immersion is complaining about her steak and saying bonjour whenever she enters a room.
Yeah, that's so eerily accurate.
If that show took place in Cincinnati, it would be game over. But it takes place in Paris, so it's actually kind of charming and amazing. How do I know this? Because I've watched some of it. Whatever, don't judge me. The point is, I understand why your wife wants to live in Europe. What I don't understand is why she's clinging to this idea when it is totally impractical, especially right now. If you guys don't make enough money to live there, or can't make enough money when you live there, it's a non-starter. End of story. It's not like she's saying, hey, I found a great job in Vienna that'll totally support us. All you'd need to do is teach English 3 days a week to buffer the salary paycheck or maintain your sanity. And you're saying, no, they don't take debit cards and they write the date funny. Look, if that were the case, the problem would be totally resolvable. It would be an easy win. But it sounds to me like your wife is living in kind of an alternate reality where the rules of life don't apply, much like Emily in Paris, now that I think about it. If your wife can't make the finances work and she's expecting you to just figure it out so that she can eat pasta and paint landscapes in Tuscany all day, it's not just unreasonable, it's also unfair to you. She's basically making her cockamamie fantasy your problem and then crying and blaming you for not being optimistic enough to make it happen. A little bit like emotional blackmail. Take me to Europe or I'll hate you. Come on. Are you kidding me? I'm sorry. Look, I don't mean to be so blunt about it. Obviously, she's unhappy about her situation right now. She's probably a lovely woman. But that sounds a little crazy to me. And you're right. English teachers, especially those with no experience or very little, are going to make minimum wage out there, essentially. It's not a good life if you're over 30. Hell, when I was 25 and I was getting paid as a teacher in Europe, I quickly found other means of income because the pay was garbage. I'm talking poverty level wages. You may fare better, but not much, I'm afraid. So yeah, you wouldn't just be giving up this stable life for such a big unknown. You'd be putting yourself in a stressful and truly dangerous position. Gabe, how does he even go about having this conversation with his wife?
Well, I do think he should have a very direct conversation with her about this whole idea. I would make her understand that there are very real, very practical barriers that make this move difficult, if not straight up impossible. If she's really dead set on moving to Europe, then invite her to come up with a realistic plan. If you can both make it work, it sounds like you would be down to give it a try. But if she refuses to even make an effort there, then tell her that you can't entertain this idea any longer. I mean, if she decides to hate you for not buying a one-way ticket to Barcelona, then you can point out that that's highly manipulative. And most importantly, I would help her see that pinning this fantasy entirely on you with no regard for the practical reality is, like Jordan said, it's unfair and frankly, a bit delusional. In this conversation, though, I would also try to understand why Europe is so important to her. You know, why is she persisting with this impossible fantasy? My guess is that there's something else going on here besides the fact that she hates living in the US. I wonder if she's dissatisfied with her life. Maybe she's bored with work. Maybe at 53, she's ready for an entirely new chapter, but doesn't know how to create that change in her own life where she is. And so she might be outsourcing the work of changing her life to you. She might be desperate for hope, desperate for some novelty. I can certainly understand that, especially in the middle of a pandemic. But she is projecting that need onto this fantasy life in Europe, which, by the way, that never works, right? I mean, once you settle into a new place and the shine wears off, you're basically left with all the same problems and concerns you had before. Because moving cities, that's not a panacea for unhappiness. It's the old wherever you go, there you are thing, right? So maybe you can help her see that. And maybe if she does see that, she won't hold it against you for not being able to make it happen. Anyway, if she does keep holding this against you, though, then you two have some deeper issues to resolve. Honestly, my sense is that Europe is just the tip of this iceberg and she needs to figure out what's going on underneath it. If she can't resolve it yourself, couples counseling could be a great option. You've been married for 30 years. You obviously love each other. You both sound great, but stuff builds up. We know that. People change. You're charting out the second half of your marriage. You're charting out the second half of your life. I'm sure there's a lot of good work you guys can do as a couple here. Europe, for me anyway, would really just be the excuse to have that deeper conversation.
But look, candidly, right now, I'm also going through a phase where I need a freaking vacation so bad that I also want to move to Europe, but not really. I've lived there before. It's amazing. I stayed there. I went to high school there. I worked there. But wherever you go, there you are, as the old saying goes. And your problems will be the same, only worse because you don't have jobs or good income. And because you can't read the menu anymore and people talk funny and taxes are higher and you can't find peanut butter to save your life. But really, it sounds like escapism to me. I know you literally can't go on much of a vacation right now, but I think you should take one as soon as you're able. I know I'm going to. Get Europe out of your system, out of her system, or at least show her that it's not going to solve all of her problems.
Great.
I think that's a great place to wrap it. Hope you all enjoyed that. I want to thank everyone that wrote in this week. Go back and check out the guest this week, Larry Lawton, the former Jewel Thief, if you haven't yet. That is a two-parter. It is amazing. If you want to know how I managed to include all these amazing people in the show, it's always about the network. Check out our 6-minute networking course, which is free. It's over on the Thinkific platform at jordanharbinger.com/course. Dig the well before you get thirsty. Don't try and make relationships when you need to leverage them. Then you're that person who just reaches out like, hey, haven't talked to you in 5 years. By the way, I need a job. Dig the well before you get thirsty. Once you need relationships, you're too late. And the course is free. Come on. JordanHarbinger.com/course is where you can find that. A link to the show notes for this episode can be found at JordanHarbinger.com. Transcripts in the show notes, all the links you need in the show notes. There's a video of this Feedback Friday episode on our YouTube channel, or going up soon anyway, JordanHarbinger.com/YouTube. I'm also at Jordan Harbinger on Twitter, Instagram. Hit me on LinkedIn. You can find Gabe on Twitter at Gabe Mizrahi or on Instagram at Gabriel Mizrahi. This show is created in association with Podcast One and my amazing team, including Jen Harbinger, Jace Sanderson, Robert Fogarty, Ian Baird, Millie Ocampo, Josh Ballard, and of course, Gabe Mizrahi. Keep sending in those questions to friday@jordanharbinger.com. Our advice and opinions and those of our guests are their own. And yes, I am a lawyer. I am not your lawyer. So do your own research before implementing anything you hear on this show. And remember, we rise by lifting others. Share the show with those you love. And if you found this episode useful, please share it with someone else who can use the advice we gave here today, or somebody who will be entertained by the advice we gave here today. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on this show so you can live what you listen. And we'll see you next time. I wanted to give you a quick bite of the episode I did with Mark Cuban of Shark Tank and Dallas Mavericks fame. Mark gives advice to entrepreneurs and founders in these uncertain times, tells us how he stays on top of trends in technology, and how the U.S. can compete with China.
When everybody's afraid, the best way to deal with it is by coming together. It certainly seems a lot bigger than anything we've seen, you know, in my lifetime. And the combination of the protests and looting and the pandemic, all these things combined together to make for really uncertain times. And when people are uncertain about their future, that's why people rebel. Martin Luther King said, rioting is the voice of the unheard. Mm. The only surprise is that it's taken this long. Kaepernick didn't even bring the focus to himself. You know, he just happened to be taking a knee and somebody caught him with a phone camera.
What would you have done in that moment, at that time, if he were your player, how would you have handled that?
I'd hug him.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you were president, how would you improve race relations?
I mean, I'd hug a few people.
Yeah.
You know, I'd walk out there and listen. You know, I'd take advice. I wouldn't think I had all the answers.
This piece you wrote, Dear White People, We're the Ones That Need to Change. This is probably controversial. I would imagine you get some blowback from something like that.
A lot of people felt I was calling them out as racist, which I wasn't doing. In order for things to change, then people need to take measures and understand, be very self-aware about what's going on with them and how people are living their lives.
A lot of people don't seem to have much to look forward to right now. What do you think we should be looking forward to as a nation?
I mean, look, there's no better time ever to start a business than right now, because all businesses are effectively going through a reset. And so there's a lot of advantages. And with the protests and the riots, it gives us just one inkling of hope that maybe we'll make progress. Maybe this time we'll listen.
For more with Mark Cuban, including the future of the technology economy, check out episode 362 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.
Save big money on everything for your spring projects at Menards. We have all of your garden and landscaping essentials. Master Garden Premium Garden Soil contains a slow-release fertilizer that feeds gardens for up to 9 months. It produces better results and is ready to use for all your gardening needs. Save big on Menards' great selection of garden and landscaping products. Compare brands in-store or online at Menards.com.
Save big money at
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.